This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
You're darn tootin', it's One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Thursday. Chopping it up with you on the Bills and their offseason, which is 4 days in the making, and certainly a lot earlier than any of us had hoped for. But nevertheless, we press on in this world of no games on the weekend for us. I mean, there are games, but they don't involve the Bills, and so
feels like there's no football.
That's all I hear.
I've seen some people on social media say, I can't even watch football this weekend. I can't do it because the Bills aren't in it.
You get down, and we've got the TV, we've got televisions all over our offices because we got to keep track of everything and social media and all that, and all the analysts and stuff about the Chiefs, Bengals, and the Eagles, Niners. It's just like Charlie Brown's teacher to me right now.
Womp, 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 womp.
That's it.
Yeah.
I do not care.
Yeah, you're tuned out.
I do not care. I'm gonna leave town.
Okay.
I won't.
But I'm thinking about it.
But I'm checked out mentally.
Yeah. I get it. We all have the playoff hangover. Some of us have postseason depression. In light of the outcome last week. I get it. We're all just trying to recover and press on. And the Bills are doing the same, as we know. So there is some news concerning the Bills today. This is only a report. The team has not confirmed this. But ESPN.com's Elena Getzenberg was the first to report that the Bills and their safeties coach, Jimmy Salgado, have parted ways. Salgado, an original member of Buffalo's coaching staff when McDermott came in. So he's been here each of the last 6 years, was their nickel corner coach, and then was promoted last year to safeties when Bobby Babich went to cover linebackers to replace his dad, who retired last year at this time. Good dude, good coach. No confirmation from the team, but that's being reported.
And no rationale. We'll probably never find what the thought process was or why they felt it was time for him to move on or any of that. So, changes at some level. And they do every year. I mean, most of these coaching staffs have some tinkering going on. And like we've said before, it was beginning of Sean's third year before he intimated to us and the media that, I think, all right, this is the staff that I envisioned when I took this job, even though they'd been to the playoffs that first year. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just and you go down all the coaching searches and changes, and it is a long and extensive list. Every team in the league is affected by it right now. You can scroll up and down this list on the NFL, and it doesn't end. I mean, there's a handful at least of changes in every team.
Around the NFL we go, which is presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And we begin in the AFC East, where the Jets had some interesting news today. After interviewing 15 candidates for their offensive coordinator position, that number straight from the mouth of head coach Robert Saleh. After interviewing 15 candidates for the OC job, Nathaniel Hackett, the fired Broncos head coach, has been named offensive coordinator of the New York Jets. They also hired Keith Carter as assistant offensive line coach. So two hirings by the Jets to add to their staff today. I don't know what to make of this one. There is a prior coaching connection between Saleh and Hackett. Saleh and Hackett coached together on Doug Marone's staff in Jacksonville, where Saleh was a linebackers coach, and obviously Hackett was the OC down there. So that is official. The Jets announced that, and it is official news. So Nathaniel Hackett, offensive coordinator for the Jets, starting in 2023. Of course, people are already trying to connect the dots, saying, Nathaniel Hackett coached in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. Will that be able to get Aaron Rodgers to New York? If he wants to leave Green Bay. A lot of people were saying the same thing in Denver last year. They hired Nathaniel Hackett so they could get Aaron Rodgers as their next quarterback. And then, what happened? Aaron Rodgers stayed put in Green Bay and
Aaron
whatever.
Aaron Rodgers ain't going anywhere. He's got a 31-point-something-something cap hit.
Well, that's nothing these days. I mean, Carson Wentz got traded with a $37 million cap hit 2 years ago.
To the team he left, not to the team he's
– Right. Yeah, Philly took a $37 million cap hit to trade him to Indy.
He crushed both those teams on the salary cap.
Yeah. Yeah, the Colts didn't care because the owner wanted him out after 1 year. Yeah, I think Hackett's hiring is mainly to keep the offensive scheme largely the same. And the reason I say that is, so you had LaFleur left the Jets organization. His brother is the head coach in Green Bay. They run almost the same system. And Hackett worked in Green Bay two of the last 3 years. So in my mind, I think the logic behind the hiring is an effort to keep the offensive scheme largely intact with a guy who's run that scheme before.
Let me ask you this. Why?
Because I think they're holding out a ridiculous shred of hope that they can still fix Zach Wilson. And the best way to do that is by keeping the offense largely the same. I'm not saying to start next year.
Yeah.
Because Saleh said in his press conference today they are interested in getting a veteran quarterback. He said he and Hackett had a long discussion on that. They did not talk names, but there is going to be a concerted effort to add a veteran quarterback who presumably would be the starter in 2023 while they work on Wilson's game. And I think if they believe they're going to make something out of Zach Wilson, they know they can't throw him a new offensive system on top of that. I think you're only going to compound the problem. Now, do I think they're going to fix that guy? I don't think so. I don't think he's fixable. But if you're the organization and they say they still believe in Zach Wilson, I think you try to keep as much continuity as possible. You change the person, but keep the scheme the same with your OC coming in the door. I think that had a large part in the hiring of Hackett.
I think that's dumb.
Well,
you can't,
Steve,
we've talked
about the Jets before. I mean, listen, are you surprised?
You got to get the right people in the door. And if you even had to start from scratch with a new, completely everything new, if they're the right guys, you're going to know right away. And you're going to have a difference made right away. This thing about, well, I'll make it, that you're just telling me that kid's not smart enough to play quarterback. You a good coach, the best coaches, NFL coaches should be at the level where you drop them into a situation like the Jets, like Denver, like the Raiders, like the offensive coordinator that's going to be the Chargers this year, whoever that may be. You drop a guy into that environment, they should be able to maximize the performance of the guys in that building, even if they have to teach them a new language. And a new offense, because there's no new football. There's only different ways to describe it. I mean, so to think that this time, like right now, you bring a new guy in, Zach Wilson should already have his head in the playbook now, today. It's not like you're going to wait until, let's see, when OTAs start, we'll give him, he's got months to get ready for this.
Yeah, I mean, there are rules. There are rules in the off season as to how much work they can do under the new CBA. Like, they can't interact with their coach.
All they got to do is send him the playbook, get him in it, keep it fresh, and talk to the guy on the phone. It doesn't – whatever.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for that. That's a fan move. That's a fanboy move.
Why do you call it that?
Because everybody thinks the solutions are easy. Yeah. It's like, all you got to do is just keep the same offense. He'll be great. He'll take another step forward. No.
The Hackett hiring is going over like a lead balloon with the Jets fan base.
You think? So. Well, he's going to try and fix this Wilson because we know how well he did the last Wilson he had.
Who's actually won a Super Bowl.
And this Aaron Rodgers stuff about it? No.
Well, I mean, the Packers – basically, the reports out of Green Bay are Aaron Rodgers is open to reworking a deal if he plays there in 2023. The Packers are also expected to consider trading Aaron Rodgers to an AFC team for the upcoming season. So it sounds as though everything is on the table right now. So
Carolina give them two ones?
I don't know.
Jets give them two ones?
It's steep.
Or what are they, you know, or what are they at, or what else are they asking? Two ones and a two?
Yeah, I don't see how you give up two ones when you may not have him for more than a season or two.
Two max.
You know what I mean? Like, he's 39. Or he'll be 39 for the upcoming season.
He'll
I don't know
40.
If he's turned 39.
He'll be 40 by the time you see the end of the foreseeable future.
And, I mean, he can still spin it. Don't get me wrong. I still think he's the most accurate quarterback I've ever seen. But he's got his warts. He's an eccentric.
Yeah, I get that. And he could handle the New York media.
He can, but his comments and stuff is easy fodder.
So
for the New York
they'll love him.
They'll run with
love
it.
Him. They'll love him. You know, I get it.
Is that love in finger quotes?
No, they'll love him. It's every day. It's just that those guys will be able to sit down and not do anything. They'll just have to run with whatever Aaron gives them, and they'll love it.
Elsewhere in the AFC East, Steve, more information is trickling out as to the flaming tire fire that was the Patriots' offensive coaching staff this year. Arguments on the practice field between players and coaches, disdain for one another, people getting reamed on the practice field by Belichick, namely one of his coaches, Joe Judge. Some stuff is trickling out, and that obviously means there were a lot of people who weren't all that happy with how the season played out, not only on the practice field but the playing field. The more you hear, it's like it's downright amazing they were a 9-8 team.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Bill O'Brien's the OC now, but Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, holy crow, there was some stuff going on there.
It got into the season. Joe Judge was kind of the voice there for a minute, and then he started to move away in the background because it seems to me, from all the articles I've read and the things that we've been hearing, Mac and Joe Judge did not like
Mac
each other.
Mac couldn't stand him.
Mac and Judge were, like, shouting at each other in practice field, and so Judge started to be phased out because – you know, you didn't want your quarterback to not like the guy or not, you know, have a good relationship with him. So then it started to be Patricia moving to the forefront. It was an absolute atrocity because they were, from what was reported, the players were, you know, asking questions, trying to get in the offense, and the coaches weren't there to give them, they didn't know, really have the answers for them, which is a catastrophe.
That's backwards.
Yeah. When you're a player and you've got questions, you go to the coach and say, hey, what about this? What about that? And those coaches are always like, well, here's what the thing is, and here's why we're doing this, and here's the thing, and here's what happens if this happens, and if that happens, we're going to do this other thing. They explain everything. That's good coaches are on it. Apparently, they weren't on it in New England, and they were saying, we're just going to do that. Well, we'll get to that later.
or the head coach, Belichick, apparently said, hey, we have to have patience. With the coaches.
With the coaches.
That's what he's telling his players.
Yes. And that is an absolutely hopeless feeling.
Here's the thing that doesn't make sense to me about that whole edict from Belichick. If Belichick is telling his players, I mean, you're in September at practice and you have a question about something or you're frustrated by something and Belichick, the head coach, says to you, hey, we've got to have patience with the coaches. As a player, I'm thinking to myself, weren't you guys here February, March, April, May, June, July, August, like putting this whole thing together? What do you mean patience? You've done nothing but this for the last 7 months, and now I've got to wait for you to give me answers?
When we got a game.
That is a flaming tire fire.
And we got a game Sunday. Thanks. You're right. And even the players, it was reported that one of the players, the center, brought everybody in after a particularly horrific
David Andrews training camp
practice. Yeah. And gave an impassioned speech to the players, and it was after that speech where quietly they got a calm message. Hey, listen, you're gonna have to be patient with these coaches. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to gather it. And he's like, we're sucking out in practice against our defense,
spinning our wheels.
We are stinking it up in practice. They were like 10 of 23 one day with an interception and four sacks taken. they were getting their heads caved in by their own defense, and they didn't like it. They didn't like it.
Where did they – I got to look again because I enjoy this. the Patriots finished 26th in total offense, 24th in rushing, 20th in passing, 27th in third down conversions, 17th in points per game. Now, that was a team that was also the beneficiary of 8 defensive touchdowns this year.
Oof.
Which led the league.
Oof.
Yeah. Defense was top 10.
So. Yeah, defense was real. And it was even better than that, I think, because of that, because of what you said, the playmaking. You know, they were playmakers back there. And yeah. Those are the things that change games. I get it where you come out there and they can't run it on you and they pass it and they get a couple of drives together and score some points and they only give up, 20 points. But if you give up 24 points or 28 points and you have 3 turnovers and 2 pick sixes or a pick six or a fumble scoop and score, that's enormous. That's enormous. And that changes games. That's kind of what the Patriots did last year. They did it a ton.
Right. The mock drafts have already started in earnest, Steve. I know you're thrilled by this. Mel Kiper, ESPN, put out his first mock draft. And to the chagrin of Bills fans, he had the Bills taking defensive end/outside linebacker Derek Hall out of Auburn, 27th overall. I think the vast majority of the Bills fan base would like the Bills to take receivers and offensive linemen on the first 2 days of the draft, if not from front to back in the draft. Yeah. So to see another defensive player selected in round 1, when we're going on, how many years in a row is this? Last year was Kyir Elam. The year before that, who was the first? Why can't I remember? 2020 first round pick. Was Rousseau,
yeah.
Right? And then the year before that, they didn't have a one, but the first pick was a defensive lineman. It was Epinesa. And then where are we now? Now we're in 2019. Ed Oliver.
Yeah.
I mean, keep on going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They have thrown some assets at that pass rush. And then they signed Vaughn. Let's not forget. So – they're still at it. Maybe they'll continue to work at it. If you look at the teams that are left, though, I think they're taking the swing at the right pitch, if you get my meaning. San Francisco and Philly are unbelievable up front. Cincinnati, same thing. They've got some guys and high draft picks on their D line, and their defensive line are the things that are really clicking for them defensively. The Chiefs are a little bit different. They're not quite as stout up front, but they've got some guys. So, I get that. You want to have a defensive front that is awesome, but it's hard to get there, man. You got to pick consistently in the top 5.
In the McDermott era, the Bills have only picked an offensive player once in the first round, Josh Allen.
Right.
Everybody else has been a defensive player, and only twice since 2014 has the first round pick been an offensive player. Sammy Watkins in 2014 and Josh Allen in 2018. That is it. It's been defense every other year. Oh, my God, if we pick a defensive guy again.
I'll say this.
I mean, I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibility because, as we know, Brandon Bean goes best player on the board, but.
Yeah. Here's the thing, too. A difference-making defensive player, I think, is more rare than an offensive difference maker. Mm. Because an offensive difference maker, I mean, you just get them the ball somehow, some way.
Yeah.
Defense, they got to find the ball. And the, you know what I mean? I mean, it's just harder to do that defensively, particularly even given the rules that the way they're slanted.
I get it.
They're just harder to find.
I think the common misperception for fans when it comes to the draft is, hey, we need a guy at X position, and we need it badly. That should be our priority in round one. And it might be, but if the value doesn't match up, they're not taking the guy for position X because now you're reaching and you're probably going to regret it. So there are different options that you can take there. One is move up to get the guy that you do want with the proper value, move back and wait to see what falls to you, or take the best player available on the board, whether he's at position X or not. And more often than not, Brandon Bean has done that. And in round one, it's worked out pretty well for him over the years. So you can say what you want, but that's usually the best course of action. And it's not just by the Bills. Just about every team in the league does that. I mean, there are exceptions where they will reach for players because they have a perceived need at a certain position. And, you know, maybe they'll have a guy. But, look, Steve and I have been around for enough drafts by the Bills where they did reach for players that need positions, and it didn't go so well.
Brian Billick, the former head coach of the Ravens, said it best. He goes, need is a terrible talent evaluator.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if you need a guy at a position, you're in trouble. That's why the modus operandi for the Bills and for most teams out there is through free agency, you try and fill every hole. You get your roster full of players who have experience and who have a certain level of proficiency at whatever position we're talking about. Corner, offensive guard, safety, running back, name it. You fill your roster with guys who have a veteran track record of at least – a certain level that you could plug them in and you would not be – they're not going to fall down. And certainly, sometimes you get guys who are looking to prove something or who have been either given up on by another franchise because they were injured a lot with minor things, other thing, or they were in the wrong system for their skill set, whatever. You think there's a chance that if under your tutelage, under your program and in your system, they're going to flourish – those are the guys you sign in free agency. You try and fill your whole roster up with those guys. And then when the draft does come around, it's like, well, we got three corners. Do we really need to take one in the first round? Well, if he's the guy, yeah, we can take him because he may be better than any of the guys we've got. Yeah. Or the same thing with the guard or the tight end or the running back, any position you want. So that's where you're at. And the Bills – have put themselves in that position a lot. So the best – and it's just the way it is. When you're in the bottom half of the draft, you know, you pick the best player on the board, the best player who you think is going to have the best pro career. Maybe he's not going to be a star, but he's pretty good. He's going to be able to hang in there with everybody. We'll be all right, you know, that kind of thing. You don't have any choice. You have choices, but they're not as good as that one.
Yeah. And, yeah. The pool is smaller,
and that's why teams care a lot about how tall, how heavy, how fast that guy is. Because at least with those tools, he's going to be able to hold in there physically and you know hold up. At least,
right?
So that he's this fast, and he's going to be able to outrun. He's going to be able to run at the pro level. He's going to be able to pass block. He's going to be able to hang on physically. He's going to be able to overpower some wide receivers. He's going to be able to overpower some defensive backs. It all becomes about measurables because it's such a physical game. So oh my gosh, the mock draft season drives me absolutely insane. Yeah.
People love it.
Brownie and I last year picked, what, our first two picks we got?
Yeah.
Didn't we pick?
We nailed Cook.
We nailed James Cook. Who was our first pick?
Take Elam?
Yeah, Kyer Elam. We both picked Kyer Elam and James Cook like a half a day. Like when we broke that day, we both called for it, and it happened while we were off the air the next day. And then we talked about it the next day. Both those guys.
Well, all right. Shows you how good my short-term memory is.
We couldn't. We're not going to do that again. We'll never get that right again.
Hey, the blind squirrel finds an acorn every once in a while. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that could go down. The crazy thing is Kiper with the first pick to the Bears. defensive tackle Jalen Carter from Georgia.
Okay.
You got the first pick. I think the Bears are going to trade out of that spot. Trade down a little bit.
What would you get?
To a team that wants a quarterback. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What would you get for the overall pick?
I think it depends how far you're moving down.
Right.
If you're still in the top five, right? Like, let's say the Colts, who are at four, need a quarterback, and in front of them is the Houston Texans, who are probably drafting a quarterback. You want to get in front of them to pick the guy you want.
Right.
To go from 4-1, that's probably a hefty price tag. I think it's at least a future one.
You flip picks.
You flip picks, and then you got to give them your one.
Next year?
Next year, maybe. Because you're going to the top of the draft board. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're only dropping down to four.
Yeah, maybe.
And if you don't
maybe
need
it's – I don't know. I'd have to look up the
There's at least
values.
Two of those picks are going to be quarterbacks.
But I could see Indy being motivated to jump over Houston, who is undoubtedly taking a quarterback. Seattle right behind you at five could take one. You know, I know they like Geno Smith, but is he the long-term solution? I don't know. I mean, he's good enough to get you to 9-8, 10-7, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see Seattle trying to play the leapfrog game and jump over the Colts. You know, if you the Bears could – Ryan Poles has an opportunity here because you could move down to 3 or 4, and I still think you could get Jalen Carter. I think you got a good chance at that. Who's the best defensive player in the draft for my money?
Down to how far down?
3 or 4.
Yeah, for sure.
There's going to be a lot of jockeying there. The Raiders are probably going to be in the market for a QB. Carolina at 9. So there could be some very interesting movement in the top 10 this year to try to get one of the top two quarterbacks. Because you got Houston, Indy, Seattle, Las Vegas, Carolina. They're all in play. Atlanta could even be in play. I know they took Desmond Ridder last year in the third round, but if you got a guy you like better in this year's draft, you're taking him, right? I mean, Ridder was a third-round pick last year.
Right.
So you got arguably 4 or 5 teams in the top 10.
Well.
And they're all going to be wanting to, you know, jump over each other to get one of these guys. You know, whether it's Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, I will see. I just think if you're the number one pick of the draft, I think you've got to maximize it, right? I mean, you stunk all year. You've got to get a guy that can make a difference now, today.
Yeah.
Now, or you've got to get enough for him that the picks you get for him are going to transform your franchise in some way, shape, or form. So – you know, because Arizona's not taking a QB. They're at number 3. That's a spot. You kind of watch what happens in front of you. And if none of those teams, if somebody trades up ahead to Chicago, take Chicago's pick, gets a quarterback, and Houston takes a quarterback, Stroud, and then Young, or Young, and then Stroud, whatever, the number 3 pick is Arizona.
Yeah, the big question is whether or not there's a third quarterback worthy of that kind of value. I think that's where the next debate comes in. I think that will largely determine how much movement there is after those two are gone. But because there's two bona fide top tens, by most people's accounting, the demand is not – I mean, the supply is not great, so the demand is going to be big. And those teams that are desperate – they're going to be giving up the farm to get up there if they like one of those two guys enough and believe they're a franchise player.
That's what you got to – is if you trade out of that spot, do you get enough to help you? And are you going to save your job, basically, is what you're doing in Arizona?
Either way, you're putting your job on the line there if you're taking one of those quarterbacks.
As of right now, Arizona doesn't even have a head coach. They're still looking.
Yep.
And they, you know, so that's, yeah, there's
they
a
got
list
some
of,
other work
there's
to
a
do.
List of 8 or 9 guys out there.
And they have a new GM. Topic of discussion for you today at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550.
Wait a minute. Think about what we just said. Arizona got a brand new GM.
Yeah.
No head coach. Tennessee just got a brand new GM. The Jets, new offensive coordinator, okay. New England, Schwartz, new defensive coordinator, you know. And they're telling us now, Mel Kiper's telling us who those guys that they don't know who they are yet are going to pick.
Yeah. I think he's just assigning value and need. He doesn't know what any of these guys are thinking yet.
Exactly.
But
we don't even know who.
ESPN.com calls up Mel and says, Mel, you need to do a mock draft.
Well, my point is, not only do we know what these guys are thinking, we don't even know which guys we're trying to figure out who's thinking.
Yeah.
Right?
We don't even know who to think for.
We don't even know who.
On whose behalf are we thinking?
We don't know whose mind we're reading.
We don't even know.
We don't even know. And here we are. Let's do a mock draft.
Why don't you just tell me who you're going to draft?
Just, you know what? Let's go. Let's go on vacation.
Topic of discussion, which player do the Bills need to take the next step in 2023? We know that there's 21 free agents, and they got to add a bunch of players and maneuver around the salary cap and all that, but there is still 30 to 40 players on the roster, including a lot of the young players in the last couple of drafts. Which player do the Bills need to take that next step in 2023 to help push this team over the hump? You can give us a call at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. Or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. Steve and I take a break, back with more, including your phone calls, here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, asking you which player do the Bills need to take the next step in 2023 to help them get over the hump and win an AFC title. So feel free to give us a jingle, 803-0550, the local number to call, 1-888-550-2550. And we're going to go to the phones here in this segment. And leading us off is Bill in Rochester. What do you got for us, Bill? You're on One Bills Live.
Okay, everybody's looking at edge rushers, linemen. How about a tight end? How about Myers from Notre Dame or Washington from Georgia? I know we have Max, but wouldn't it be nice to have a tight end that's a super blocker and could replace the slot receiver and still get things done? Think about it, and I'm done. You can comment on that. But I think a tight end of that caliber of a Kelce or a Gronkowski, wouldn't that be nice? Thank you, and I hope to hear from you.
Yeah, yes, it would be nice. I'll be shocked if this kid Myers, whoever it is you're talking about, it turns into a Gronkowski or a Kelce. I'll be shocked. Maybe he's a good I'm sure he's a good kid, but you throw those names out there like there's one in every draft, and there's not. So
yeah, he's talking about Michael Mayer, yeah.
If that's fine. If the guy turns out to be like a Gronk or a Travis Kelce, sure, absolutely, draft him. Draft him any way you can get him, but that's a big ask for a kid who's been playing against dental students.
67 catches, 809 yards, 9 touchdowns last year for Notre Dame.
Awesome. I get it. Let's see him run the 40. It is an interesting
way to think about getting Josh Allen more weapons. I think people say get Josh Allen more weapons, and they instantly think about the receiver position. So Bill makes a decent point that, hey, you know, don't dismiss tight end. And I do know that it is a really good tight end class this year. It is not considered to be as deep a receiver class as it's been in the last couple of years. So, again, if the value points you that way, and I'm telling you right now, that kid from Georgia, Darnell Washington, 6'7", like 280, runs like a deer. He's a freak in nature.
I've seen
I don't
those
know
guys
that he's
before.
A first-round prospect, though, because his college tape is limited.
I hate to – we go down this road every time.
Here we go. I can sense it.
You see all these guys come out of there, and I'm with you. I see these guys. They're 6'7", 6'8", 6'6", 240 to 280, and they can outrun most guys on the field, and they come to the National Football League, and they are just ho-hum. And it's frustrating.
Well, and that's
because with the kind of physical tools they walk in with, they're the same guy in year 10 that they are in year 1. They never get any better. And they string together 10 years of mediocrity because they're so big. They're such a big target. Everybody thinks, well, I can, you know, they're going to bring this out of them.
I can maximize that.
A perfect example is Mercedes Lewis in Green Bay. Came out, was with Jacksonville forever. Now he's with Green Bay. Everybody loves him. Great quality guy. He's 6'7", 240, had all the skill in the world, and he's just a guy.
But he's still playing.
That's his greatest skill.
Longevity.
Longevity. That's it. They just keep him around. Great guy. He can do a lot of things okay. But I've also seen him catch a ball and not get both feet in the back of the end zone when a sixth grader could have done it. Stuff like that drives you crazy about those guys. Mm-hmm. Look at Kyle Pitts down in Atlanta. You still got to have somebody to throw him the football.
Right.
Pitts is a great guy, tremendous athlete. He may go to the Pro Bowl because guys think he's so unbelievable, but he's just okay.
Yeah. Darnell Washington is the Georgia kid, 6'7", 265. As I mentioned, though, doesn't have a lot of college tape. Played in 4 games as a freshman, 8 games as a sophomore, and then finally 15 games this year. But he's playing behind Brock Bowers, who is the starter at tight end, who's only a sophomore.
Tight ends are hard to evaluate. Gronk came out of Arizona State.
Arizona.
I'm sorry. Arizona. If Gronk came out again after his career is over and he came out again, you know, and his he'd go in the top 5 in the draft. Maybe number 1. Same thing with Kelce. Those guys come out, they go, but nobody knew. And they had some, measurables and stuff, but nobody knew these guys. You can't tell. Because so much of that position has to, it's such a hybrid position in today's NFL. If you're a really good one, you can line up right outside the tackle and fire off and get on a defensive end and more than hold your own. And then you come out and you work your magic on a safety and you're running free like Travis Kelce. I mean, I couldn't believe Jacksonville. It's like they didn't even know who he was. They didn't even look at him. And he was running. His 4 catches on the first drive, touch and the touchdown. I'm like, what are you doing? Haven't you watched tape of these guys?
I think Bill, his whole premise, you know, he's trying to think in a different way. Okay, the receiver class isn't as strong. Tight end class is very good.
I get it.
Add a tight end.
Makes sense.
He's got some, you know, chops in the passing game, and now you've got Dawson Knox and this other tight end who can play together, and he's probably got visions
think
of Gronk and Hernandez back in, you know.
Absolutely. I'm all about it. Because you can, if that guy can split out at that size and that speed and all that, and he can come in and run in the running game, and all of a sudden you're running 12 personnel a lot, and you're making hay, and they can go deep. You got a guy that can take the lid off, and these guys are working underneath, and you can, and then the defense doesn't know how to match up, because if you split out, they're outmatched. And if you go down inside, they're going to try and bear up, and they can't match up there either because they got safeties or whatever. So I get it. It's a great idea. But it takes 2 special guys at tight end, 2 of them. And, you know, the Bills have got – I like Knox a lot. Yeah. I like him a lot.
Really had a strong second half of the season too.
But it took Knox 3 years to get here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
And it took Gronk a minute. So, I'm totally with you. But if that guy's the best guy on the board, grab him. I'm all about it, sure. But I'll say this. It has been my observation, not my experience, just my observation, that wideouts are much easier to evaluate than tight ends.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to evaluate a guy because if he's in when you're in college and you can catch the ball and you're a tight end, that's what you do. You never know if the guy can run block. Then you get him in the pros and you find out he's soft. He can't run block. He can split him out. It's like Gesicki down in Miami, right?
Yeah.
And then, or the other way, he's an offensive tackle. He's like Lee Smith, right? He comes in and he's a grinder and a physical guy. Everybody loves him, and he can get his hands dirty, but he can't catch, or the nose guard can outrun
him. Athlete in space.
Yeah, the nose guard can outrun him and cover him 1-on-1.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff. So that's what you're looking at. These guys that come out of college, rarely do they come out of an offense that is versatile enough where you get good film. You can see, well, he can run. Look at this. He's really good in the run game.
Makes the projection harder.
Right. It's just a harder projection than it is for a wide out or a running back.
Let's go back to the phones, and we go to John in Hamburg next. What do you got for us, John? You're on One Bills Live.
I am not going to go player-wise on this question. I want to know, since he came here this year, everybody is gaga about the offensive line coach, Aaron Comer. And I just want to know why I haven't heard a peep out of anybody, and I hope nobody thinks about injuries. I want to know if you guys can give me a review on the coach of the offensive line. And to me, I'm 80 years old, and since I went to high school with Jim McNally, we all know that the offense, the way the offensive line goes, so goes the team. I just want to know if you could maybe get off the player deal and review Mr. Comer's job.
Okay, John. Yeah,
that's a good question, John, because anytime you have a group that's, you know, that you feel like underperforms at any point, that's, you know, that's the first guy that sees it, and that's the first guy that has to get evaluated for it. You're right, Cromer. He comes in, he came in with an excellent resume, and he has had great success everywhere he's been.
Including now, here the last time.
Including in Buffalo when they were leading the league in rushing.
2 years in a row.
I got to be honest with you. I tend to see what I see is not a lack of scheming and not a lack of preparation. I see some guys getting beat one-on-one is what I see.
Yeah.
You can say what you want. I don't think I'm qualified to say, yeah, great job, bad job, or whatever. But I think we all know, we're all saying they need to protect Josh more. And certainly in the Cincinnati game, they needed to. But that was kind of a one-off. It's a great question, and I don't know that I'm qualified to answer about how guys are getting coached up front for the Buffalo Bills. I'll say this: I don't think they'd hang out with a coach they didn't think was qualified. As we saw, you know, if there's any problems with any of these guys, Sean has never been shy about changing it out, which he did this last year.
Right, and then I would say on top of that, there were some execution problems by the players on the field. I understand how that does go back to coaching, because that's the guy that's getting them ready. But again, I'm in Steve's boat. I'm not going to pretend to know the finer points of offensive line play and critique it. Only the players know the play that's being called and what their responsibilities are in terms of executing that play. So far be it from me to make a call on that. I think we know what the rankings are in terms of running the football, passing the ball, third down conversions, sack percentage allowed, all of that stuff. But player by player, you know, what was the development? I want to believe that, you know, Ryan Bates had a solid season. I think Mitch Morse had a solid season. Some of the other guys were a little bit up and down. I think it's too all-encompassing. And again, the trained eye is something that I don't have. And if Steve, you know, doesn't feel comfortable doing it, I'm certainly not going to do it. So,
yeah. But
sorry we can't
this.
Definitively I'll, answer your question.
I'll say this, though. Usually for coaches, if their group is underperforming, they take it pretty hard personally because it's their job. They care about the guys that they're coaching. So if Cromer, I would really be happy and I'd interested to hear what he says about how the season went. Certainly they had guys in and out of the lineup once in a while. But and some guys playing hurt. But I think for the most part, coaches I've been around, a lot of them, are pretty self-aware that they say, no, that was on me. That wasn't on them. And this was, you know what I mean? They know exactly what's going on, and they know who was a problem in the offensive line room, if any, and who wasn't, what guys they were trying to work on to get to a certain point. They just never got there. And sometimes when they're trying to get guys to do stuff and they keep not doing it because he can't, you know, he's not coaching them well enough to get his message across. It's a complex thing because you got one guy coaching 12 with the guys on the roster in the practice squad, and chemistry has a ton to do with it. So I don't want to double talk your question, John, but I don't know if I'm qualified to do it. All you know is that you're right. The offense goes as the O-line goes, and far too many times this season, the O-line was too spotty to give Josh and those guys a chance to run it the way they wanted to run it.
Break time for us here. More of your phone calls next. It's One Bills Live. Bills fans, Connect Life needs your help. During the month of January, every blood donor during this month will receive a pair of Bills-branded socks. Connect Life is the only blood donation agency that keeps your donation here in for patients in Western New York. To make your appointment, please go to connectlife.org today. We got to get back to the phones at 803-0550, where we are asking you today, which player do the Bills need to take the next step in 2023? And we go to Carl in Depew next. What do you got for us, Carl?
Yeah. Well, there's no sense crying over spilled milk this year. I think our biggest issue is we've just plain weren't good enough. Hey, you could start with the offensive line and the defensive line. You can start right there.
Yeah, I mean, the defensive line was beat up. No Daquan Jones in the last game. That hurt. That guy had played in every game this season, out with the calf injury last Sunday. Jordan Phillips is playing with one arm. He had a torn rotator cuff for the better part of the last 6 weeks.
Losing Von Miller didn't help.
And Von Miller's out, so that didn't help. The offensive line was much healthier than the defensive line was. But as Steve pointed out, yeah, I mean, at times their play was spotty this year. There's no debating that. So,
well, that's like – I think we have two really good tackles, and I don't know if 79, if he was hurt a lot of the year, but he was the next coming of the Lord last year, and he just had a so-so year. I mean, Morris is as good a center as we're going to get. Interior line, yeah. Our tight end, he's okay. He's not a Kelsey. We know that. But we have no wide receivers except Diggs, and we need a slot receiver. So how many – I mean, that's quite a few players, and we spent a lot of money on defensive edge rushers, and they haven't produced the way they should with the high drafts that we took.
I'll say this about – what, Carl, your premise about they just weren't good enough, I would dispute that. I've said, and I still believe, they've been good enough to go to and win the Super Bowl for 3 years, since 2020. But you got to play well, and you got to be healthy and playing your best on the game in the playoff that you're playing. And they haven't been doing that. They haven't done that. Now, you can say what you want about 13 seconds. Who, you know, that's how good they were last year. And the year before, when they got beat by 18 points by the Chiefs, and it was like, oh, my gosh, and everybody was up in arms, the Chiefs played their absolute best game. They played their best game, I would venture to say, in 2 years against the Bills on that day. They're hard to beat. They're a really good team. And if you don't play as that good, you're going to get beat. The Bills have proven throughout the regular season and playoffs they are good enough and talented enough in any given year to go to and win the Super Bowl. That's just all there is to it. But they haven't gotten it done because they've met a team that played better on that day. It's that simple. You can say, no, they got – listen, it's about the game they're playing that day. The regular season doesn't matter. Last year's playoff loss doesn't matter. How good your quarterback is doesn't matter. Your offensive line – on that day, they got a chance to move on, and they haven't gotten it done to this point. But this – you can point to the – Bengals game and pick, okay, the offensive line wasn't good enough. Our defensive line wasn't good enough. Our wide receivers weren't good enough. But against the exact same field and the exact same teams that we're talking about throughout the league, they were really good enough all through the regular season. They get to the playoffs, and for whatever reason, mostly because they play a really good football team who plays better than they do or gets a bounce or gets a chance to get a field goal to tie it in the last play of regulation, and you lose it in overtime, or you blow a 16-point lead in 2019. That's all it's that simple, and there's that much that's out of the control of the Bills and always will be, and it was out of control of the Bengals, it was out of control of the Chiefs, and it will be this weekend for the Chiefs, Philly, for San Francisco. It's all out of their control. They're going out there and playing as good as they can play and seeing how the other team gets it done. The Bills have been good enough to do it literally for 3 years.
Yeah.
And that's the frustrating part about it. Because right. We're sitting here trying to fix something that's really not broken. You're chasing your tail. They build this roster. They were in – I'm not going to go back and check, but I remember having this same conversation 12 months ago. they're going to have – it's going to be a different team this coming year. There's going to be new players. We didn't know who Kyrie Elam was. We didn't know who Khalil Shakir was. We didn't know who James Cook was. We didn't know any of these guys. And we didn't know who DaQuan Jones or Tim Settle. We didn't know Vaughn was going to be here. We didn't know any of this stuff. But they built it in the offseason and got to a point where, yeah, they put it together. Now they're going to do it again because that's what they do. They've got a great protocol. They got a great process for getting it done. It's not going to be the same as it was 2 years ago or the same as it was this year. It's going to be a little different, and it's going to look different and feel different, but it's going to be as effective. That's the plan. And you got to have faith in that because they've been doing it since 2018. So, yeah, I get it. On that day, this last weekend, it wasn't, but don't get caught up in that. This is a good football team with a great culture and a great way of building a roster year over year over year over year. Now, certainly Josh is the kingpin of that. Diggs is a great starting point, and Von Miller, when he comes back, is going to be awesome as well. They got some guys that they can depend on, lean on in that roster. But they're going to be good.
Yeah.
And they're going to be good again. And I'm fine with everybody writing them off and saying, wow, they got to rebuild the whole thing. They ain't going to rebuild it. They're going to reload it. Just like they've done over the last 3 years. We have been in this exact spot for 3 years, and every offseason they have built it. And last year they built it to be the Super Bowl favorites. But the only reason that happened was because of the way that game went, the very last game of the season. And that's a really teeny tiny small sample size of what goes into it.
Yeah, people
just
forget
like this, just like this Bengals game is a small sample size.
People forget they won 8 in a row up until that game. So
you run into good teams, man.
You run into good
teams. You got to play good on that day.
Yeah, and to Brandon Bean's point, they didn't roll into the playoffs with the same degree of momentum they had the previous 2 years because of the unfortunate circumstances surrounding DeMar Hamlin. So that was that played a factor as well.
The only reason they were Super Bowl favorites was because of the electricity of that last game they played in last year. And that is not the reason we should all – that everybody – that's the reason everybody who didn't see him all year jumped on. We've been on them. I'm telling you, they've been good enough for 3 years.
Yeah. We had to take a break here. There is some breaking news, though. The Carolina Panthers have hired former Colts head coach Frank Reich as their new head coach. That, according to Tom Pelissero, the organization's first quarterback as an expansion team in 1995 was Frank Reich. He is now their head coach. We take a break here, but when we come back, we're joined by USA Today editor and NFL writer Doug Farrar joining us next. It's One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are, hour number two on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show, and pleased to be joined now by USA Today editor, NFL writer Doug Farrar on the program here. Doug, how we doing? We're down to the final four.
Yes, we are. It's a fascinating week, all kinds of strategy to get into and all kinds of tape and metrics, which is what I've been doing, both the looking forward and the forensic looking back, which I imagine is why I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, some of that. There is some breaking news also, as one of the five open head coaching spots has been filled by a guy who's pretty familiar to Bills fans. Frank Reich named the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, a team where he played as the expansion year quarterback in 1995. He was their first QB after he left Buffalo. Kind of a cool circular deal there.
Yes, circle of life is complete. They're a team on the rise. Sam Darnold actually played a lot better than people think last year. We go off on Sam Darnold because he's Sam Darnold. I would say he was a functional, about league average quarterback. I don't know if they're going to bring him back. In my latest mock draft, which came up this morning, I mocked Anthony Richardson from Florida to them. at, I believe, 9. And he's kind of a, you know, if you want a Justin Fields, that's your guy. Showed exponential growth in the second half of his first season as a starter in college. So he's a developmental guy. Reich, you know, I've talked to him before. I remember talking to him media day when he was the Eagles OC the year they won the Super Bowl. And I talked to him for about 20 minutes and I walked away thinking that guy's going to be a head coach sooner than later. He just got the whole picture. He was waylaid, obviously, by capricious ownership and the team's inability to find a quarterback after Andrew Luck retired. But, you know, I still think he's got a lot on the ball. I think it's a good hire.
Yeah, and as you see this take shape, and it'll be interesting to see the staff he puts together. I think one of the things that ownership, a guy like David Tepper, would understand, the longer a guy's out of the loop, the harder it is to stay connected to staff who could come in and really help you. That'll be, I think that's the interesting thing. If you got any ideas about guys he has worked with or who might come with him to Carolina that he worked with in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure because he's had different guys, you know, and as we see in New England, you tend to gravitate toward the guys that you've worked with before, for better or worse. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, just overall, I think it's certainly, you know, Steve Wilks held it down really well. And, you know, this is it. It's a good, sensible. It reminds me a little bit of what the Jaguars did with, you know, blowing the thing out with Urban Meyer as the Panthers blew it out with Matt Rhule. And then you make the sensible hire. You get a guy who has been part of a Super Bowl winning staff. This Reich was obviously part of Peterson's. So, you know, you can expect that kind of offense, a lot of verticals, a lot of boot, a really, you know, Reich has always been a really he designs offense as well. The most fascinating thing to me will be, because I know Phil Snow did a really good job for the Panthers, you know, what that defensive staff would be like. That's kind of, because, you know, you tend to know, okay, an offensive minded coach is going to do these three things and whatever. It's always interesting for me to see, like with, in the case of Sean McDermott, who was obviously a defensive coach, like he got Brian Daboll and everything just blew up in the good ways. You know, when coaches have a particular emphasis, you always want to see like in the reverse emphasis, what kind of coaches they get for that side of the ball.
Yeah.
Right.
We've got the two conference championship games this weekend, Doug, and I know you kind of put together a NFC championship column just about how the Eagles can beat this 49ers defense. It is a formidable matchup, to say the least.
Yes.
And I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more complete roster than the Eagles, offense, defense, special teams. But this Niners defense stops just about everybody. And it's really their front seven, because if you look at their secondary, it's not like you got a bunch of world beaters back there, but it just doesn't matter because their front seven is so dang good. I think it covers up any of the perceived limitations the guys on the back end might have.
Right. I mean, like at safety, you have Deshaun Gibson, who's been around for a while. I think he's 31 or 32. He's having a renaissance year under D'Amico Ryans. Hufanga, the second year safety from USC.
Nice player.
Kind of a Troy Polamalu light, that, you know, attack safety down. I mean, their cornerbacks can be vulnerable to a point. Fred Warner is an alien, best linebacker in the league, might be the best defense. That play, I know you guys saw it, where he was at the line of scrimmage and followed C.D. Lamb, a premier slot receiver, up the seam 30 yards. Linebackers aren't supposed to do that. You know, and obviously they're well coached. They've got talent all over the place. Two things that I discovered in going through the metrics and watching the tape that they are vulnerable with versus play action. They don't defend it very well because, and the Eagles kind of have this too. Everyone's hair is on fire. So when Warner and Greenlaw, the linebackers, looking at run fits or what they think are run fits, they're like, go. And they can be exploited up top when they bite on play action. The other thing is, and Jalen Hurts has just cut zone coverage to ribbons. The Niners are a pretty heavy cover three, cover four team. Now, cover four has more man principles, but if I'm D'Amico Ryans in that game, I am playing man or cover four or, you know, three lock or whatever. I'm employing more man principles. And while that does make you more vulnerable to Jalen Hurts, the running quarterback, I don't care because I don't want Jalen Hurts sitting back there in the pocket for however long he has. He has the best offensive line in the NFL. So even with Nick Bosa and Omenihu and all those guys, it's still a problem. I would rather trust my front seven to take care of that and play man on the back than just sit in there in these cautious zones. And you guys know when you play zone, I mean, you know, true zone, not mixing it up and doing different things. You have those little pockets of coverage where it's not there. And Hurts has been really good at exploiting that. So it's going to be a fascinating matchup on both sides.
So you feel sure. You feel
and
good.
The thing is, this isn't like Chiefs-Bengals where this is the third time they're playing in like a calendar year.
Yeah,
they haven't played each other since week two of last season. And Jimmy Garoppolo was San Francisco's quarterback. Jalen Hurts ran – I think he ran for more than he passed for almost. And nobody was sure about Jalen Hurts at that point. I mean, we were all thinking coming into this draft, oh, how he got that extra first-round pick from the Saints. Maybe he'll take a quarterback. That's out the window. So things are very different. There's a lot less to go on. And that's, in a way, those are the kind of matchups I like because you just don't know what you're going
to
see.
To your point about the man principles for San Fran, you still like that even with A.J. Brown on the other side and Goddard for that matter. Those are tough man matchups.
They are. And I mean, you pick your poison there. You can bracket in four. You can bracket in man. What I would want to avoid is Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, especially running those deep overs and seam routes. And any mistake with the linebacker handing off to the safety, and it's 60 yards downfield. I would rather take my chances, you know, matching a lot. Because you guys know this. You can play match coverage, which is – you play zone up until a certain point in the route, and then you play man. You can play off man. You don't have to. Not every man coverage, obviously, is just aggressive press
right. And
you know follow you all the way through. There's a lot of stuff you can do. I would also, the Niners are good at this. I would also flip my safeties post snap. I would show Jalen Hurts, and it's not like Jalen Hurts can't figure it out, but I would show Jalen Hurts as much. I would muddy the picture for him in the back half as much as possible.
So as you see that game taking shape, how big a difference will it be that, you know, San Francisco's going east, home field, okay weather, none of that's going to be
there's some snow in the forecast.
Some snow. Yeah. I mean, both these teams seem built for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kyle Shanahan mentioned this week that the week, I think it was 15 game up here in Seattle where I am, where the weather was just awful, what probably helped. I don't know how much stock to put in that. As you said, they are built for this. They are a massively successful running team, especially since they got Christian McCaffrey. They're going to lean on that. So, you know, if we're talking about trends when it comes to DVOA since week 10, second half of the season, including the playoffs, the 49ers are number one in defense in DVOA. They're number two in offense in DVOA. They have a really good offense now with Brock Purdy and McCaffrey and all these guys who can just line up anywhere and any personnel. So, you know, I have the Eagles sort of, you know, sneaking it out, but I think it's going to be really, really close. That to me is the pick 'em.
Where's the Philadelphia defense vulnerable?
That's a good question. They are vulnerable in that. Well, it's interesting when it comes to playing defense against pre-snap motion, which is an important point because Kyle runs it like 75% of the time. They are the second best defense in EPA, against motion in the passing game. They are second worst against motion in the run game. And that could really bite them. And that's, you know, like I was talking about, where everyone has their hair on fire and everyone's just going for it. Any sort of gaps in the run fits can be a problem. I think their safety group is I mean, C.J. Gardner-Johnson's good. I think the safety group is okay. I think Darius Slay is one of the better lockdown corners in the NFL. James Bradbury, who I still don't know why the Giants let him go, and he'll be a free agent after this year. He can be vulnerable at times. I think the linebacker group is underrated. They're front four slash five because they play a lot of bare fronts. They're, you know, I think we all know about that. So probably safety group, a little bit linebackers, and just, you know, what I wrote in my piece this morning, Jonathan Gannon, their DC, he's got to strike that balance between the hell bent for leather, get after the quarterback thing, and what that does to you if you're prone to misdirection and play action and pre-snap motion. And nobody calls those things better, all three of those things better than Kyle Shanahan. So I think whether it's vulnerable is with pre to post-snap look changes, those different kinds of misdirection vulnerabilities. And, you know, because they have those vulnerabilities in the run game, this is the one team you don't want to play when you have that problem. Yeah. Because Kyle will have watched all that tape, and he'll have 17 different ways to just beat you up with it.
Right.
Wanted to ask you a little bit about the mock draft you put together. And, you know, Bills fans are dead set on.
I'm told it went over like a Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I think a lot of members of the Bills fan base have come to the conclusion that it's time to just go all in on offense and adopt a model similar to that of Kansas City, which is, you know, we'll get one really good defensive lineman up front, Chris Jones, and then we'll try to patch together the vast majority of the rest of our defense and hope Spagnuolo can call the right shots, and we'll load up on offense and just try to outscore you, which I guess to a certain degree you can say that's their approach. There might be some dissenting opinions on that. But the bottom line is, Buffalo's weapons don't quite measure up to Cincinnati's weapons, Kansas City's weapons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I think you could probably make the argument that Kansas City probably has the best offensive line of those three teams as well. So Bills fans are naturally thinking O-line, receiver, you know, weapons. So in your mock, you go Brian Branch, DB from Alabama, who's a really good safety, and I understand why. Is Poyer going to be back? I mean, you know, entering his age 32 season, cap issues for the Bills, Micah Hyde in his last season of his contract coming up next year. So I get the logic, Doug. I think Bills fans might be asking you, do you have an old lineman or a wide receiver you like in that range at 27-2?
Well, I do. This is, I think, my fourth or fifth mock draft. I generally alternate between offensive linemen and running backs. You know, I Anton Harrison from Oklahoma, I like a lot as a pet. I tend to alternate with Harrison between mocking him to the Chiefs and the Bills, because I do think with Orlando Brown, the Chiefs have a left tackle problem. And then it's running back, either Bijan Robinson, who would be absolutely thermonuclear in that offense. Bijan Robinson broke 104 tackles last year, forced 104 missed tackles. That's insane. Imagine taking Saquon Barkley and putting him on the Bills. That's what that'd be like. Or Jahmyr Gibbs from Alabama.
Right.
The thing with Branch, it's not just that Poyer, who is one of the top three safety, is a free agent. And the Bills, by the way, at this point, I believe, are $19 million over the projected cap.
At least.
So when Brandon Bean says we have to focus on the draft and low-price free agents, that's what he means. And hello, the rookie window contracting is over with Josh Allen, obviously. The thing about Branch, so Poyer might be gone. Micah Hyde missed all but, what, two games last year? He turned 31 on December 31st, I believe.
That's right.
He missed. Dane Jackson is a free agent. And the thing with Branch, can play safety. He can play slot. He can play box. He can play outside. Tremaine Edmonds is also a free agent, by the way. And the difference between, at least from my interpretation, the difference between the Chiefs' defense and the Bills' defense, the Chiefs, Spagnuolo throws all these different things at you, like every color in the box. The Bills, I mean, they'll do different things, but it's, you know, 97% nickel. You kind of know what you're going to get. It's execution-based. It's player-based. you know, as I said, Branch can also play outside to a degree. And the other thing I'll say is, unfortunately, and we hope he turns it around, Tre'Davious White has not been the same cornerback, in my opinion, with all those injuries. And it's hard. I mean, I've talked to cornerbacks in the NFL about this. If you're a top cornerback and you go from 100 to 90, it's like falling off a cliff. And we hope Tre'Davious White gets it back because he has been a stellar player. So when I look at the Bills' needs, and I kind of look at where things stack up in the draft, I mean, it's a very deep class at receiver. It's a very deep class at running back. It's a pretty deep class at offensive line. So we all want to focus on the first round guy. I think the Bills can do well in the later rounds to fill out those things. And, you know, my mock drafts are kind of exercises as to, because I'm watching more and more players on tape as it goes along. By the time the combine hits in a month, I'll have my whole, like, okay, this is sort of my big board. And these are all the guys I've watched, you know, whatever, 200 players. Right now I'm just kind of seeing where everyone fits. So next week it might be Bijan Robinson again, or it might be, you know, Zay Flowers from Boston College. You know, it could be a number of things. What I'm doing at this point is just kind of seeing where players fit. And I think there are a lot of ways in which Brian Branch makes sense in his, you know, top level ability to do multiple things at a position of great need. Because, I mean, I don't want to throw a, I don't want to throw a trash can full of water on the barbecue here, but we may have seen the end of the best safety duo in the NFL as they have been for the last few years. So you got, you know, whether it's, you know, it's whether it splashes off the page or not, you have to start looking at those things.
Yeah. Understood.
Yep.
Doug, thanks very much. Enjoy the conference championship games this weekend. We'll continue to keep an eye on your stuff pre-draft as we get closer and closer to the combine and then the real big event, which I know in a way is Christmas for you at the end of April. So thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. That's thanks, USA Doug. Today editor, NFL writer Doug Farrar joining us. We will take a break here. When we come back, we will get to the tweet sheet for your thoughts on who you feel on Buffalo's roster has to take the next step to help them get over the hump in 2023. It's One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Thursday, asking you which player do the Bills need to take the next step in 2023. You want to single somebody out, feel free to do that for us. Open phone lines for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. But we go to the tweet sheet first, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And we lead off with Andy, who says, Spencer Brown, they need to bring in some competition, but if he can take the next step, it helps them focus offensive line resources on the inside. So he's saying if Spencer Brown takes the next step, we don't have to focus on tackle early in the draft. We can worry about guard somewhere on day two.
Yeah, I mean, that would be awesome, except how are you going to know if he does that before the draft?
Exactly.
Yeah, I get it. You're right. Those guys are huge up front. If you can get those guys plugged in so you can get them, you know, get them squared away and know it, yeah, that's a huge burden. It's five of the 11 guys on the field. If you got those guys playing at a high level, that's the percentage of guys you got playing at a high level in your offense. I mean, it just cuts down your margin of error in an enormous way. So, yeah, the better your offensive line is, the better your offense is. We learned that in 2018 when we had Josh at quarterback. And, you know, at times.
Well, they couldn't win at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Just could not.
They were getting just caved in. And, you know, in games like that's where Josh has these games like he did in week 17 of that year down in Miami where, you know, they do nothing offensively. And
running for his life.
And he still almost wins the game. So, it's an interesting question because you got this quarterback that can do all of this. The reason you find out he can do all of this is because some of the other aspects of your offense aren't up to snuff. So when they get up to snuff, is he good enough in the offense that you know every other team runs? Is he good enough in that offense to play as well as they do? We'll see. But, man, oh, man, you got this atomic weapon taking snaps. Yeah, find a way to make it easy for him.
Yeah, protect him a little bit more, diversify the attack with more skilled position players. Isaac on the tweet sheet says, offense, my picks are Gabe Davis and Dawson Knox. Allen needs a number two guy behind Diggs. On defense, it's Kyrie Elam and Greg Rousseau. Having a lockdown number two corner and a top pass rusher will help. Yeah, I mean, Von Miller is that guy. If Rousseau can come along and take another step, yeah. I thought he took a step this year. You know, there were some games you didn't see him as much. I got to tell you, I think Rousseau is underrated as an edge run defender. I think he's very good at that, reading the run game. The consistency in the pass rush, yeah, you'd like to see it a little bit more. He was having a good year when Von Miller was on the other side drawing attention. And then when Von Miller was out of the lineup, not quite as successful. Although, come the end of the season, he's tied for the team lead in sacks with 8 with Von Miller. So, you know, it was a step up, I thought, this year for him. If he takes another step, yeah, you might have something there.
Right. That's huge. And I thought so, too. I thought he took a huge step forward. And it's interesting, too, because we have this – you have a problem with Von in the equation. You know that he made a difference when he was on the field for these guys. Ed Oliver was helped by it. Also with DaQuan Jones, Tim Settle, Jordan Phillips back on the field, Ed Oliver got a boost in his play because, you know, there were two guys doubling him. And on the other side, Epinesa, Basham, and those guys, they had a chance to really be a different group than they ended up being at the end of the season. Not only because of Vaughn being out, but because of the defensive tackles starting to go down with injuries. Most notably, DaQuan and Jordan in this last game. It was a crusher. They couldn't win the line of scrimmage when their top guys down inside weren't 100%. And it showed not only on the inside, but on the outside as well.
Chris on the tweet sheet says, I'm going with a coach here to take the next step next season. It's Ken Dorsey. Yeah, I mean, look, Brandon Bean said it at his season wrap-up press conference. He said, I hope I'm a better GM now than I was the first year I was here in Buffalo. He was the first-time general manager here with the Bills, and he freely admitted that he had made some mistakes here and there, but he thinks he's a much better GM now, and I think that's probably true, and probably true for anybody who's doing something for the first time. You're learning on the fly. You're going to make some mistakes, and yeah, I mean, I think Ken Dorsey can only be better going into year two because of what he learned in year one.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting question, and it's fun to think about. You get a guy like Daboll in who has been an offensive coordinator for quite some time, called plays, and really hadn't been enormously successful, but yet comes to Buffalo finally and gets, you know, Josh Allen starts it from the ground up and kind of builds this thing the way he wants over 4 or 5 years. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he made it work. Ken Dorsey, I think, is on that same track. What happens in these coaches, Ken Dorsey will probably, hopefully, will get this. A lot of times players look around, they say, you know, they go to their coach after the season's over and say, what do I need to work on? You know what? And they get those exit interviews and the coach says, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. We need more from you here. We need more from you there. And says, okay. Well, if you're a coach, I don't know who you ask.
Yeah.
Other coaches, the head coach, does the head coach give you some of that? And the players, I mean, who are you going to ask? The players? Players are, you know, coaches rarely ask players, what do you think of my coaching, right? The coach just looks at, are you playing great? Then I'm doing a good job. Go ahead and go. It's going to be interesting to see Ken Dorsey self-evaluate, do some work and ask questions about what do you think of this when we did this. Here's the reasons why. What do we think? The self-evaluation, I think, is different as a coach trying to self-evaluate and your staff self-evaluate because there's, you know, the only thing you've got is, you know, obviously the stats that your offense put out, but also how your players played and did they do what you really wanted them to do? And that's really the acid test.
Keith on the tweet sheet says, Gabe Davis or Khalil Shakir, we need to know if wide receiver 2 is on the roster. Well, you, much to Steve's point on the previous submission, you can't wait until the fall to hope that he's there. You're going to have to draft and add in free agency before then, and you got to add to the pool. I mean, Gabe Davis had all of this past season to prove he could be a week-in, week-out producer as the number two. And
if there's if there
it
are those
came with
there,
mixed results.
Yeah, if you don't think he is, yeah. Okay, then he's the number three now. You know, you got to find somebody.
Yeah.
You got to find somebody. I think that is the most obvious spot on a team, on every NFL team, that you've got to go out and actively look to find the best player available. It's almost when you've got the quarterback, that's the next position. That's the quarterback position when you've already got one. You know what I mean? We've said it a ton. When you don't have a quarterback on your roster and you don't know who's going to be and you're kind of looking for one, you're obsessed with that. Well, if you've got that guy, the guys outside are the next priority. You got to get those guys fixed. Now, of course, your offensive line is important and all that stuff, but you're talking about point production. You're talking about having guys that win and move the football and score touchdowns. I think when you look at this and you've got guys that are good, you're looking to make that room elite, great. You're looking for difference makers.
O-line and receiver is the fastest way to make life easier for Josh Allen.
Right.
And I think you have to look at this based on last year's performance. As we said, Gabe Davis had some nice weeks, but they weren't stacked up together in succession to where you would say, I'm convinced this guy can be a bona fide number two and give us weekly production, because the production wasn't there on a week-to-week basis. So then you say, well, what do we do? Well, you better get a guy that you believe can walk into that number two role and produce for you on a weekly basis to balance out the attention that Stephon Diggs gets as your number one. And then if Davis can be your three, or Shakir can take a step forward and be your number three, great. Maybe you bring Jamison Crowder back and have him as a fail-safe option as a number three. You know, you got him on an affordable deal last year. He was injured all this year. He's going to be hard to drive his price up any higher. So logic would say he could be an affordable, you know, depth option. But you're going to have to draft somebody pretty high who's capable of walking into the number two role as a rookie.
It's a tough spot because we're sitting here saying, now Gabe's got to be better. And we don't know, because we haven't really heard, we don't know whether some of Gabe Davis's, you know, inconsistency or whatever, however you want to describe or quantify Gabe Davis's season, how much of that was Ken Dorsey? How much of that was Josh Allen? How much of it was Dawson Knox? How much of it was, you know, the running game, the offensive line? How much of that inability to get Gabe Davis involved every single week and get him targets and touches and all that, how much of it had to do with Gabe Davis, his drops, the routes called, how many times was he the number one option and not Stephon Diggs? Because Stephon got a ton of targets. You know, how much of that was outside of Gabe Davis's control, I guess is the question. We don't know. It's you got a first-year offensive coordinator, and it's his first year as that solid number two that was always on the field. He took more snaps than anybody. So, you know, there's a lot we don't know, because there's so much we don't know about the ins and outs and the intricacies of the offense. And that's a question, you know, that we can only observe the results of, not really the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts of how it happened. But that's something that we all of us can look – even the casual fan can look and say it needs to be different going forward.
Yeah.
And whether it needs to be Gabe Davis being treated differently by the offense, or whether it needs to be a different guy there, we won't know until they make that decision and we see the results of that decision.
Yeah. I think Gabe's catch rate this year was 52%. I mean, that doesn't even put you anywhere near the top 100 in the league. So, yeah, there is some improvement to be made there, and I think he'd be the first to tell you. From Saber Maniac, he says, Elam, White clearly wasn't the same player when he came back, and it sounds like Benford has a chance to move to safety. Yeah, Elam's a good pick. I think that was a guy whose play was on the ascent at the end of the season. And I'll say this about Trey White. A lot of times, guys coming off a major injury like that aren't quite right when they first come back. It's the following season when they really get back to the player they once were, and I think that is the hope for Tre'Davious White going into the 2023 season. But Elam, in my estimation, was a guy that was on the ascent coming down the stretch this past year, and I think it gives them comfort to actually try Christian Benford at safety because of what they saw out of Elam at the end of the year. Because let's not forget, right, Benford started over him at the start of the year.
That's right. They like Benford. I think they like not only his athletic ability and his size, but they also like his demeanor and his personality and his intellect.
And his physicality. He's a physical player.
They like a lot of things about Christian Benford, which is why he did get a chance to play early in the season before he got the oblique injury and the broken hand, and you know he started to come apart physically. I had not thought about that until I heard somebody say it, and then I heard it was a conversation and a possibility from day one. I love the concept. I love the concept. He is kind of one of these finger quote guys. He's an old soul, you know. He's mm-hmm. seen a lot, and he's one of those very young players who it seems like has been around the block 20 times already. They love that about him, and I think his teammates see it in him. So I think, you know, just through this post-season interview process with the head coach and the GM, I think there's big plans for Benford in the future, and I think that safety's one of them.
Break time for us here. When we come back, some final thoughts on the tweet sheet here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Some final thoughts on the tweet sheet in terms of which player do the Bills need to take a next step in 2023, and Jerry says Rousseau, but there's plenty of others too. AJ, Boogie, Ed, Elam, Shakir. Rob says James Cook, especially if they let Singletary test the market. I don't know about you, Steve. I'm of the belief that if you just give Cook more opportunities, you'll get more out of him. We saw that as his playing time increased as the season wound down.
That's been the criticism that he said, well, why did you draft this guy if you're only going to give him this many, however many opportunities it was? And I get that. Same thing with Hines. They traded for him. He only got 11 touches down the stretch of the season, even though he did all the kick returning duties. Yes, Cook could use more opportunities, no question. But I think people are like, hey, James Cook, they need all these guys to step up. And the offense scored more points this year than it did last year. They were number two in the league in scoring. They were best team on third down in the league. I mean, there's not all that much broken in this offense. Even down the stretch, the only thing that made this offense look like it was sputtering at times, which is what we all kind of got that feel about, the only reason is because of the interceptions and the turnovers coming down the stretch. That's it. That's it. And you can put that on Josh if you want, but I'll live with it because Josh is that good. So don't get caught up in everything. You got to revamp all this. They built a really good team and had a great offense. They were scoring points. So don't get caught up in, you know, the fact that, you know, they got to fix something. Listen, they're okay. And all the opportunities they gave these guys, or lack thereof, were because they were scoring points. They didn't want to do all of that because why show something you may need later? And plus, they got guys that deserve those opportunities. So, it's easy to bail out and start throwing darts at what happened. But, man, oh, man, don't forget, this team was really good. And while they sputtered, it was execution. It was like throwing to the wrong guy or getting a tipped interception, that kind of stuff. So, let's, take a deep breath.
Take a deep breath.
Remember, we're a pretty good football team still.
Yeah. That'll do it for us here on a Thursday. We've got Greg Cosell coming your way on an OBL Fan Mailbag Friday. We'll see you at 1 tomorrow.